Hello, and welcome to the Monthly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting some of the comics we got this month, a few from DC, a few from Marvel, and a few from some of the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to discuss some of the comics we got in July 2024. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, with the summer comes scheduling stuff, so we're doing this a little later than we normally would, but, you know, we're doing it. And we're going to be following it up with the August one pretty rapidly, I think, next week, right?
Yeah, correct.
Next week, as we record this, we'll see how quickly as I edit them.
Exactly.
I got, I think, 57 or so comics, and it was like 15 DC, 16 Marvel, 26 other. So, I mean, if you had told me a couple of years back, I'd be mainly getting almost as many other as I'm getting Marvel and DC, I don't know that I'd have believed you.
Yeah, and DC is probably my biggest portion of my purchasing, and I only received 64 comics. I mean, we're both down quite a bit, and the big two kind of are not at their best, I would say.
I would agree with that. Because not only, I mean, I was sometimes getting 57 a week, and this was a 5-week month.
Yeah, it was a long month, so I expected to get a lot more than I did.
Yeah, I think part of it is what's happening at Marvel and DC just isn't clicking with me as well as what they've done in the past, for a variety of reasons. Some of it's me, some of it's them. And I'm finding more stuff I'm liking from the other publishers sometimes. And some of that is just we're getting a different mix of material right now than we sometimes do. And I think I've been in that jaded reader spot for a while, but I don't see Marvel and DC doing anything to really get me out of that as far as their comics are concerned, which really sucks.
No, I know what you mean. It feels like the big two especially, I can't speak for the indies, but it feels like they're in, and I hate to use this term, but almost like a death spiral. You know, fewer people reading, so we charge more money. Fewer people reading because it costs more money, so we charge more money. And then on top of that, I don't think they're allocating the funds to hire the best talent. And so, you know, like the relaunch of the X-Books, there's very few I was excited about with the creative teams. And I'm getting to a point of almost apathy.
Yeah, apathy. And that is the supervillain of comics.
Yes.
I guess the question I would have is, supposing more money were instantly available to Marvel or DC magically, where and how do you think they should spend it? Better writers? Better pencilers, better inkers, better colorists, better letterers, better editors, better marketing, what?
That's where it's really tough. Right now, if I was to say right now in the industry that we have, which is the industry that we are not marketing to kids, you know, these are not kids' books. They need better writers if they're going to keep a John and a James engaged. So just to maintain what they have, they need to put money into better writing and maybe some decent art. I would say DC does a better job on the art side than Marvel does typically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just to keep us. To generate anything new, it would have to be an almost separate strategy as far as digital manga, you know, what happens with them, just creating this mass market of Marvel Unlimited, DC Infinite Ultra, but not geared towards the you and I, but geared towards 12, 14-year-olds, something that you and I really shouldn't be interested in reading.
So it almost sounds like, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, so please correct me if I am wrong on this. It sounds like you think the audience that they have and have had for decades is not the one that will get them through this decade and into the future ones. That they need to basically switch audiences.
I feel like that's where we're headed because there's fewer of us as people pass away and people leave the industry. There's people who read comics for years. People we know who maybe were on the Slack channel, like someone I know, and they don't read as much. They're not engaged as much. Just people who've checked out mentally. Getting them back is a feat. Maybe you get them back through really getting good writers on there, good artists on there. But that's just maintaining the status quo. How you get new people in here, you have to go after a younger generation, and that you have to do some kids' books, you know, stuff like DC is attempting it somewhat, and there are solicits, you know, there's books that you and I shouldn't be buying, which is good.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. But I'm also thinking in the back of my head, some of these issues were true 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And to just say they need a new audience of younger people, well, yes, they got to get younger readers. That's a given. But to say they need to write differently and do different material to get that readership versus, I'm going to say, 40, 50, 60 years ago, it was the same comics that were getting the new readers as keeping the old readers. So kind of what changed that's making what they've been doing no longer viable? You see where I'm going on that?
Yeah, I see where you're going. And that's where it's tough to put a nail in it, because my first comic was probably, you know, something that I think it was in a gas station, like a Batman type thing or something that my parents picked up for me. But I mean, other than that, you know, reading some like really kiddie books, you know, like Casper and the Friendly Ghost or whatever it is, Archie Comics or something like that. There's something you got to get kids into the door with.
Yeah.
And I don't think you get them into the door with Krakoa. I don't think you get them into the door with Absolute Power. I mean, this stuff's written for 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds. It really is.
But you've got things like Batman Scooby-Doo Mysteries that I do think can bring people in the door.
Correct. There's few and far between, yeah. And the only thing that I can say is the difference, and I hate saying this, because I hate using manga as even an equivalency, because it's different, because it's already been paid for before it gets here. You know, it's just repackaging.
It's curated material. It'd be like comparing the compilations of new material manga over there to trade paperbacks of American stuff brought in over there. They're only going to bring in the best of the best, in theory.
Yeah, but yeah, if you ask kids what they like about it, show them a Western comic, show them that. They like that cutesy artsy style. And that's something that exists maybe in that X-Men comic, Ultimate X-Men right now. But it just doesn't exist. We have this hyper-realistic stuff, which is not popular.
And I think we could do an entire episode on this type of stuff. And if we get some good feedback from the listeners, maybe we will do that. But I think, again, comparing it to the manga, it's not just the art style that's different, but the packaging.
Yeah, packaging.
You're paying about the equivalent of, what, two, maybe three times the cost of a 32 physical page comic, 20 page story comic, and getting like 200 pages of story.
Yeah, it's too expensive. And I think part of that is because, I mean, you look at it, it used to be a grind. People didn't care. And I don't want to say that, but they really didn't care about the quality of the work. They were pushing out 60 books, and we got to get out 60 books. And back, and I'm talking like back in the 60s, back in the 50s, back in the 70s.
Always been a churn out as much material as you can marketplace.
And so they were just churning it out as quick as possible. The quality of the work did not matter as much as like, make it for a kid. A kid will like it. Great. And then they didn't pay the people well. And honestly, in the manga world, people aren't paid very well. Mm-hmm. If you hit on the anime side, you make some money. But literally, and they have this whole thing with the going indie and creating your own works, you make a little more money. But if you're working in one of the big studios, they work themselves to death and don't make very much money. So it's like the old 1960s trope of comics here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but that's what it is.
It is. It is. I just think it's so easy to go to the, we should do it like manga. But like you said, it's such a different kettle of fish in so many ways that we may be learning the wrong lessons there.
Yeah. And it's so hard to put myself in the mindset of back when I was, you know, 10 years old or 12 years old or not even 12. I would say more like 8 years old and 10 years old. What was really triggering you at that time? It's hard to think like that. And so what triggers an 8-year-old? I don't think I know.
Yeah, but I think we can clearly look at most of the material we got this month and say, this isn't it.
No, this is not it. This is not triggering. I will say that with saying there are some gems out there. There's some things that I'm really enjoying.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally.
But from the big two especially, there's a lot of it I'm just like, not only not inspired, just depressed a little bit. Apathy was the word.
And I definitely think they need to be getting new readers all the time and keeping the old ones and stuff just to keep the whole system going. But just selfishly, I'm at the point of view where if another crop of readers comes up behind me, that's awesome, that's great, but I want stuff I want to read.
Yeah, yeah, I want stuff I want to read too. And that all this being said, I don't think that next batch of readers is coming. That's me thinking right now, thinking out loud, and that's a little bit sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just where we are.
Well, speaking of where we are, What do you say we dive into DC?
All right. Let me filter down my list. How many DC did you get, you said?
15.
Okay. And I have 15. All right. We tied.
And I don't know, about 2/3 of them are Absolute Power related?
Yeah. That's where we are right now. Absolute Power is taking over the books in anticipation for whatever. I can't remember the new thing. It's called All In.
It's All In. And then, yeah, it's the All In initiative. And that's, yeah.
Yeah.
I think pushing an initiative and blatantly saying we want you all in, given the price of comics and stuff like that, is a very interesting decision and one I would have recommended against. Yes, you want readers to be all in, but you want them to be that because they're genuinely interested and they organically go to the other titles and stuff as much as they can afford and are interested in, not something you should be pushing them to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't make it a prerequisite of reading and enjoying the universe.
Or don't even make it seem like it's a desired end goal.
Exactly. Yeah. I always like pick and choose what you like. Maybe you hate Green Arrow and I love Green Arrow. Then I should read it and you should not.
Yep. Yep.
That's the way it should be.
All right. Why don't we just get the elephant in the room out of the way and talk about Absolute Power?
All right. How did that sit for you?
The comic itself was good.
Okay.
But the event overall was uneven.
Yes, I would agree. I think there was some setup in here that if it was delivered in a different manner, it would have been a much more enjoyable read.
I thought Absolute Power number one, I mean, Wade pulled out all the stops on this. I mean, going in, I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. It's Wade, it's Dan Moore, so I've got faith in the creative team, but do I really want an event at DC right now? And my inclination was no, not really. But they set up the stakes. They amped up the stakes. They moved a lot of puzzle pieces around and told, I thought, a very compelling first issue of that miniseries.
I agree.
And it's like, I don't know where they're going, but I hope the overall thing is a good ride. But then I started reading some of the other stuff. And if there's a checklist for this, I didn't bother to consult it, and maybe I should have. Because I think I read a few things out of order. I think even if I didn't, they told things out of order. And I thought some of the tie-in issues were shock and awe, a lot of things going on, but it felt like we were, I don't know, skimming the surface of the story in some places.
Yeah.
In one or two places, bouncing between too many threads. And there were two things they did that I felt were tactical errors.
Okay, what were yours? Because I have one glaring one for me that I felt like I wanted to happen to make it a much better story just for me.
For me, there were two things they did that I get why they did it, but I don't think they should have. The first, Absolute Power Origins.
Yeah, okay.
Amanda Waller's origin is essentially that of Batman's, except it was her daughter that was killed. Her husband goes after the guy and dies killing the daughter's killer and stuff. It felt unoriginal. It felt reductive. They were doing it with direct parallels to the Batman origin, so the subtlety was completely lacking. And we see the start of Amanda Waller's power base, so there was some interesting stuff, and I'm curious where it grows from there. But to basically say she was essentially what if Batman went wrong to a degree.
Yeah.
It reduces the character.
Correct. I would agree.
So I get why they felt the need to tell the origin before, say, the movies did, but I would have given her, a different motivation, a better motivation than that.
No, I see exactly where you're coming with that. That's actually something a little different than the angle that I was taking, but I see exactly all of that was there. And yeah, that's a miss.
Now, the other thing I think was a miss was Green Arrow.
Green Arrow. Okay. What about Green Arrow?
Okay. We get an early shot of the new Arrow Cave in the island.
Yes. With the whole Connor Hawk and the family.
Yeah. We've got more Arrow family members than we can shake a quiver at or whatever. But that shot of the Arrow Cave, which was beautiful. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. But it served as a reminder of how Green Arrow essentially started off kind of as a knockoff Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, do we really need that? And then we get the, well, who here knows how to fly a jet? As if nobody would. And it seems like half, third of the group, yep, we can do it, no problem. And like, well, okay.
Yeah.
We get Tomorrow Woman, who we haven't seen in ages. Not that we ever saw a lot of her. She showed up, I want to say, in a, I don't know, an annual or two. So if people don't know who she is, that's a very legitimate thing. And according to this issue, she's a telepathic telekinetic robot, which in my mind makes no sense. If you have machines that can be telepathic, I mean, telepathic radios then become a very obvious device to have in this universe that they don't.
Yeah.
So some of that, bringing her back, I thought was a wild choice. I don't object to it. I thought she was an interesting character, but she was seen so long ago that all I remember is that I remember seeing her.
Ah.
Maybe she was a telepathic telekinetic robot back then too. I don't know and kind of don't care.
That's where you're at now.
And then we get this bright character, and it's like, I hope he's new, because I don't recognize him. I've got no idea what his deal is or why he looks so much like Ultron, which I think was not a great choice either. But ultimately, I'm still trying to figure out why Ollie is working with Waller and trying to basically hunt down the heroes.
Didn't you feel confused by all that?
Well, just recently, he was the one who was funding the Justice League prior to its disbanding.
Exactly. It's set up for the double cross that has to come, but at this point, it just felt so just off. Everything felt off with it.
If they do the double cross and he turns out to be the good guy, that's predictable. If they don't, that's a mistake. So it's either going to be cliche or bad.
That's the thing. I feel like they're setting it up for the double cross, and then I'm like, okay, this is telegraphed as hell. Or how did this happen?
Exactly. Neither path is good.
Yeah, neither one. And so I'm hoping for the telegraph, and I'm like, oh, that's a little on the nose, but that's kind of what I'm hoping for at this point, because otherwise I'm like, what did I miss here? When did this happen?
Yeah. There were a couple of other things where I was like, when did this happen?
Yeah, that's how I was feeling. So the other thing I was going to tell you, another thing that, okay, this is just me thinking and just spitballing. Okay, I was reading the Absolute Power Origins and the Absolute Power, and I was reading the whole Waller thing and all this, and whatever. And I felt like I know Waller's a bad character, a bad guy, bad lady, I will say, in the DCU. But I felt like with a little more finesse and a little bit more grayscale and a little bit more eloquence in describing her machinations, because it's basically black and white, good, bad. I felt like they could have set up almost like a Civil War type scenario, because you can see why people, humans in the DC universe would be opposed to these godlike characters who are literally vigilantes. And so I'm like, I thought that's what they were going for. And I was like, man, they really didn't set her side up very good, because they kind of hinted at it, but then they didn't dive in a whole hog. And I was like, that was a miss for me.
I think you've pointed out what is the Achilles heel of this event. She is manipulating things. She's doing a deep fake and false media thing.
Yeah.
To make it seem like the heroes have gone rogue when they haven't.
Yes.
And they're, in marketing, referring to Waller, Failsafe, and the Brainiac Queen as the Trinity of Evil.
Yeah.
So they've labeled her evil and a bad person. She's doing bad things. But this would have been a much more compelling story if things had happened recently where not just she put the Titans in the bad light, but they actually did something that had some repercussions. And so did, so-and-so. This happened over there in Metropolis or Central City or whatever. If certain things had happened where the level of property destruction had just hit a tipping point of this is too much or something.
Yes.
If they had done that, and she was from a, I don't want to say a sane point of view, but from a more objective point of view, was doing a rational thing that any of us would have done in that position of, okay, enough's enough, we've got to push back.
Yeah. Wouldn't that have been the compelling story that you would have been like, wow, this is cool, because you could see her side.
Yeah. Well, if we could empathize with her and root for her.
Exactly. And then in the origin story, her seeing having lost her family to superheroes and how, yes, it's a Batman type thing that happens. But you might have said there's deeper seated psychological reasons to what is driving her. It's happened to her whole life.
Well, if one of her kids had been off at college in Central City and something happened with one of the rogues and they were caught in the collateral damage or something, not that the rogues would have killed them because they don't kill, but fallen debris, something like that. If her family members had just been in the wrong places at the wrong times, the heroes hadn't saved them, couldn't save them, or what have you, then she could have had a growing resentment of the heroes.
Yeah.
And they're not trained properly. They're not doing the job right. I mean, this goes back to frankly, very clear aspects of Civil War over at Marvel at various times.
Oh, yeah.
Where we've got to have the proper training, all that kind of a thing. And I wouldn't want them to do that same story, but I think it would have been more interesting if it had seemed like the heroes were out of control, legitimately, and that we had seen regular humans having to take on the heroes versus we magically get out of nowhere a 7-pack of custom Amazos to go take down the heroes.
Exactly. Exactly. So you and I are thinking the same thing. I was reading that test and I was like, man, there's such a better story to be told here. And I just, so I like I said, like you said, I didn't dislike Absolute Power One. I just was like, man, this is a little ham-fisted. You know, it's a little bit on the nose.
I liked that issue. It was all the other stuff that I thought was a little convoluted, ham-fisted, and
yeah,
uncoordinated.
Yeah, very uncoordinated. I agree with you there. So it left to an overall sense of just like dissatisfaction a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm right there with you.
And of course, the tie-in for Wonder Woman, they completely disregarded the ongoing story in that title so they could do a tie-in.
Yeah, completely shut it down. Let's do
something. Not even shut it down. It's just, it's as if this is what the title was always doing. It's like, what the hell is going on with the Sovereign and stuff? You've been leaving us hanging for months. Now we're just going to skip a month to tell this?
Yeah, that was so weird.
That's got me thinking how long I keep the Wonder Woman title.
Yeah, me too. That's how I was feeling coming out of it.
If it had been a good tie-in issue with Absolute Power, might have forgiven it.
Maybe.
But it wasn't.
I agree.
All right, that's most of my rant on Absolute Power. The whole failsafe Amazo, or not failsafe, Willpower.
Yeah.
Was referred to as Willpower, but seemed to get the name later in a different issue.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? So yeah, rant. Like some of what they're doing, some of the moments, but overall, could have and should have been better.
I agree. Yeah. So, we covered quite a few books.
Yes, we did.
Did you want me to cover anything else?
I think there's one or two others I do want to talk about. Justice Society, maybe Nightwing. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'll mention one that I don't think you picked up. And I'll just say, because it was good, I did enjoy the first issue of Dark Knights of Steel All Winter. Did you pick that up?
I did not.
Okay. It was not as good as Dark Knights of Steel. I don't think it's going to be. It had that first issue shine to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that weighed heavily on my opinion when reading it. I was like, oh, this is nice. It's different.
Mm.
But I don't know if it has the longevity power. And basically, it's because it's dealing with characters that aren't as popular. So it takes place in the same world as Dark Knights of Steel, although you're dealing with a Viking setting. And there's a war going on between three factions. And we're way up in the north. And we have a Viking era war going on between these warring jarls is what they're called. And the key characters here are not the stars, the good guys. It's you get Deathstroke, Killer Frost, and Vandal Savage are like the three main characters that they're playing on. So I don't think that cast lends to as much popularity going forward. The art's beautiful, but very grim. And the All Winners made everything in the world shades of gray. So literally you're reading the whole book and everything's white, black and white, gray. And there's no color in it until something happens at the end where there's a little bit of color, and that's the whole hook and the change-up with the book.
Yeah, there were a number of reasons I didn't pick that up, and it sounds like I made the right choice for me.
Yeah, honestly, you didn't miss out. It was a decent issue, but I don't know if it's going to have that staying power. It wasn't as good as the first one, but I did read it, so I figured I'd throw that out there.
Cool.
All right, so let's go on to those other books, because I read those too. Nightwing and Justice Society, we can go in whatever order.
Start with Nightwing. I felt there was a lot of recap at the beginning of the issue.
Tons of recap.
But given the Heartless story has been dribbling out for years, I kind of needed the recap.
Yeah, it actually helped because we probably saw Heartless 4 years ago, I don't know.
Thereabouts, issue 70, I want to say 78 or 9 or something, but yeah.
Wow.
Ages ago. I like the use of Deadman. I thought that was good.
Yep, I agree.
Inconsistent with how he's seen ever so briefly in one of the Absolute Power things, but yeah, whatever. Incorrect look for a boom tube, but yeah, whatever. Love the last page reveal of the issue where we get Nightwing there. I thought that was, it's like, I want to see where this goes.
Yes.
And that was such a fun moment to tease that it could really be a great issue next time. Because I really do think Tom Taylor is a great writer.
I do too.
I'm just feeling maybe he needs a really good editor. Not that the one here is bad, But I think if they'd had a better editor on this title, it wouldn't have been as long of a plot line, or a better editor could have helped it stay more top of mind than it has over the time.
Yeah.
Because some of the things they were referencing here were things with some characters that we haven't seen in years, that we hadn't really done a whole lot with even sometimes at the time. And I think there are ways they could have kept things in play a little bit more, that this would have been, ah, that's how all the pieces fit together versus, oh yeah, I guess that did happen.
No, to your point, that's exactly it. Tom is a great writer, Tom Taylor. He's fantastic, but he meandered for so many issues in there, going off on the pirates or going off on this tangent or that tangent, the underground bank and another sibling that who knows if that'll play into it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many things that he was just doing, and yet you felt like you didn't have a ton of momentum there. It was good stuff, but it didn't move the story forward. It felt like if he would have had a little bit, like you said, on the editor side, tightening it up, it would have progressed and he still could have introduced those things while getting momentum.
But I think if you, for me at least, looking at the recap, it seemed like certain characters were there so they could provide certain things at this moment.
Yeah.
The sister, oh, now this undercuts this aspect of somebody's credibility. The Pirate Queen, that facilitated this person getting over to this place. Certain things of that sort were all putting chess pieces in place so we could tell this arc, but there are ways to do that where it's not just a good read at the time, but something that doesn't feel discarded until it was needed here again.
To your point, yeah, he would introduce things and use them and then off to the next thing where it wasn't needed. And so it was gone.
Yeah, but then again, a lot of it came into play with that backstory being essential for this issue to happen the way it did.
Correct. Yeah.
So,
but all that being said, I have enjoyed pretty much his entire run.
Yes. I've enjoyed it a lot. There've been a couple of gimmick issues, but they were well done gimmick issues.
Yeah, they worked.
Bruno Redondo is an amazing artist. Tom Taylor tells a very good story kind of in the moment. I just think he needs a little bit of help to really play out the long tail narrative that he was doing here.
Yeah, I agree. I really do agree.
But good read. And Justice Society, I know you've read that because you talked about it in the last month of Comic Spotlight before. I said, wait, I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
I've read it now.
Literally, my note on this is, I think John will like this issue.
I like the JSA.
Yes.
We finally get the Golden Age Legionnaire doing some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
His reveal and what's going on with him, we got a little of that last issue, get a lot more of it here. Very interesting. We have a reveal here at the end, and we'd actually gotten a question. We'll just go ahead and address it now from Jason.
Yeah.
Wanting to know what we thought of the end of JSA 10, he said the last panel appearance, but really it was the last couple of pages, and what direction we think the ending of the series will head towards. And I can only hope it leads towards a new Legion of Superheroes title.
I think it's inevitable. When I read this issue, the reason why I was saying you're going to like it is because, yeah, it's a total setup to have a Legion book, which a lot of people who are fans of the Legion have been waiting for, and this is it.
And they set that up as far back as, I want to say, the New Golden Age issue, maybe?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But what's interesting here is what I think we would have gotten at that point versus what I think we get out of this is fairly different.
I would agree.
And not in a bad way, but in a little bit of a perplexing way. Because, again, what we see here with the Legion, that they've, again, had time travel, they've had a few other hints before, made sense, but veers away from where I think they had started some stuff back in the New Golden Age.
Yeah. Hey, one thing that's a little bit frustrating with this book is it's one of those books that it's coming out at a glacial pace.
Yes.
Like, you do not get issues consistently. Sometimes it's a couple months between issues.
Yeah, and that kills the momentum.
Exactly, because we're reviewing this one right now. We're talking about it, issue 10, and here it is, September 3rd as we're recording.
Yeah.
And issue 12 or 11 has not come out.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected it last month. I would have liked it last month. But
yeah.
Hell, I don't even know if it's going to come out this month of September.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw it in October. And that just based on what's happened previously.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be pleased because I fear it might not be till November sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's what hurts the book a little bit. Like, I read the issue and I'm like, hey, this is a decent issue. And I'm like, John's going to love it because I saw the ending. And but at the same time, I'm getting that little bit of what happened the previous issue, because it's like 2 months ago or 3 months ago, what's going on? And you almost have to memory jog yourself or dig up an old issue, because that's the unfortunate thing of this series.
Yeah, and this is one of those things that I'm trying to take some notes as I go for the Legion Spotlight in terms of what issues do I need to add to the reading list? This is clearly one of them.
Yeah.
But I'm also trying to take some notes as to, okay, why did I put it on the list? I mean, here we've got a Legion appearance. It's a very obvious reason. There are a few others. It's a little less obvious. You know, maybe it's a villain or a character or what have you. But it does make me wonder how we got to this point with the JSA. And they'd set up the JSA was the first team. It's not that the Legion is the last team, but it's a bookend of sorts in Geoff Johns' mind. So the fact the two cross paths, not too surprising, and not the first time. But I am curious where they go with this.
Me too. I am curious. So hopefully good places.
If it does not lead to a Legion series getting announced, I was going to say in another month or two, but whenever they finish. I mean, we've got a new JSA series announced, and they haven't even finished this one yet, so go ahead and announce a Legion series, and I'll be happier.
Yeah, now's the time. All in.
Be curious who they get for it and what direction they go, because I think there's a couple of different ways, but yeah.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see that.
Well, hopefully your new book is on the horizon.
If not, I'll be unsurprised but disappointed.
And I understand.
Anything else we want to talk about with DC?
Nah, that pretty much did it. Let's go over to Marvel.
All right. Where do you want to start there?
Okay, I had 21 books, and let's see. Okay, I want to ask you, the thing that I enjoyed the most from Marvel was Namor number one. Did you get that?
Did not get that.
Okay, Namor number one, it was kind of funny. So I really liked the book, and Eric hooked me up because he gave me an alternate cover, because the main cover really kind of stunk with this book. And what was funny is I forgot Jason Aaron wrote this, and his name did not appear as the creative thing. I was just reading. I was like, huh, this is pretty good. All right. I'm liking this. Until the last page, you know, here's the creative team. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he was writing this. And it feels and reads like a re-energizing of the character, not a relaunch per se, but trying to make the character popular again. So Namor's in prison, getting treated very poorly. He wants to just serve his sentence and be left alone. Some things happen with guards, you know, things that you could think around prison stories are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, he's committed crimes against the surface people, and he's just going to serve out his time. Well, we get flashbacks in this book to Namor's time as a youth, where we see, you know, what forged him, made him who he is. He's an arrogant kid and things like that. And of course, you know, he's growing up, being raised to be the leader of
arrogant adult. Of course, he was an arrogant kid.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to be the leader. He was just as arrogant as a little kid as he is today.
Although it might have been more interesting if he was not an arrogant kid and to see what turned him into the person he became.
That would have been funny. Seemed really humble. Yeah, that would
self-deprecating, something like that.
So you fast forward and we're going to his release from prison, and the world has changed. There's some stuff that happens in the prison. I don't want to spoil that, so I'm not going to talk about it. But I will say the Atlantean kingdom has been divided, and there are kings. And so that's the setup for the future issues coming down the road, is Namor is not the king of the undersea, and almost like a reclaiming of the throne. That's the setup for the book. And it actually read very well. I enjoyed it, and it made sense because everything that has been happening with the X characters and the fall and some things that we saw that happened in other books with Atlantis, I was like, okay, this kind of works, and it's working for me right now.
Cool.
I enjoyed it. How about you? What do you want to talk about?
I would say the best book for me this month was Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah, Doctor Strange. Okay.
And I find that kind of funny because it's a Bloodhunt tie-in, and I'm not reading Bloodhunt.
That's funny. There's a very key thing that happened in it.
There was. And, I mean, I'm sure this plays into the Bloodhunt stuff somehow, some way. I don't care. It was a great read despite that. Doctor Strange was peripherally involved in the story, maybe?
Yes.
And this is mainly Bats, the ghost dog, and stuff like that, and a few other recognizable characters or whatnot, but it was a great read, it was a ton of fun, and is clearly setting up things for later use, but just as a single issue, it worked. As part of the ongoing title, it worked. Don't know, don't care how it worked for Bloodhunt, but it was a good read.
Yeah, and the things that happened in Doctor Strange have implications for the entire Marvel universe. And just so you know, I know you weren't reading it, but it directly impacts Blood Hunt. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because of what's happened in this book, it changes the game.
It does, and I think I know what you're talking about because I think it was mentioned at the end of Fantastic Four.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
Where there's a new sheriff in town, so to speak.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, that's an odd place to have announced it. I would have figured it would have been somewhere else.
Yep.
But yeah, that Fantastic Four issue, that was another train wreck. And
yes, it was.
The last one I've got on pre-order, so I'll not be ranting about it in the future.
Well, issue 24, which I have received and I've read, I'm jumping ahead. I'm not going to tell you about it. It made me want to just cancel the whole series. I'm pretty much done now.
I skipped 22, and this is 22. I skipped 23 and got off at that point, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not getting any better. It's getting worse.
That's a shame, because I've been reading Fantastic Four off the rack, I want to say since issue 250-something.
Yeah, and they're such a foundational team in the Marvel Universe, and I feel like it's hard to do them badly if you care. And you have any type of a sense of humor as a writer, I would say. It's something that's like a go-to, a mainstay. There's comedy, there's superheroing, you have super intelligent people if you want to take, puzzles and figuring things out. And to basically ruin the title is something you have to actively do by not focusing on the characters and doing one-offs and not caring about the team.
Well, and by treating Alicia as if she's the title character and the Fantastic Four are just her backup band or something.
Yeah. Pretty much.
And it was the previous run that was slot that was such a high point, right?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it.
So to go from that to this, shocking.
Yeah, very jarring.
Disappointing. So yeah, that's off my list. I will say that the other Blood Hunt tie-in I got was Avengers 16.
Oh yeah, that one was decent for me.
I thought it was a solid read, told a good story, kept going from what they'd done before. I mean, that and Doctor Strange, that's how I think tie-ins should be done.
Yeah, you didn't have to read the main series. I did, but they were good reads regardless of what was going on in Blood Hunt.
Yeah.
And just so you know, I'll just mention Blood Hunt because I did read that. I felt like we got the fifth issue. It was a nice wrap-up to the whole event. Things are resolved. Some changes are made to the Marvel Universe coming out of it. Doom approaches Doctor Doom in an astral form, and some stuff happens with them about the Sorcerer Supreme, which I liked. And the way the torch is being passed and what's going on in the title, I thought it was a ton of fun. And there's stuff that's going on in here with Miles that ties into some stuff that happened in Doctor Strange, which is very impactful. Very, very impactful. Although I wouldn't say it changes anything. It's not must read. They could tell you in a little recap at the beginning of a book. You don't have to read it. But I enjoyed it for what it was.
Cool.
Yeah. So I kind of talked about Blood Hunt. What did you want to talk about? Another one. Because we got some new X books. I don't know if you got any of those that you liked or anything.
I got a couple. I got MYX. I got X-Men. I got X-Force. I'm trying to think if there are any of the new ones I got.
Yeah, and the two of them I did not like that you mentioned.
Which two did you not like?
Oh, I got Phoenix one.
Oh, I got Phoenix as well.
Okay, I did not like X-Force. I did not like NYX.
NYX puzzled me a little bit. Because it's like they hadn't read some of the stuff that had come out recently.
Yep, I agree.
And same, I think I had the same problem with MYX, which I generally enjoyed, that I had with X-Men, which kind of bored me. With MYX, spotlighting Ms. Marvel and Sophie, I thought was an interesting choice, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like they had to rejigger the characters just a little bit to make that happen.
Yep.
But there were a few things, because I'm trying to remember if Sophie was the one who had been dating Quentin Quire.
I think so.
I think so, too. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah.
No, I think it was Phobie, actually. I think it was a different sister.
All right.
That makes a little more sense. But either way, one Cuckoo versus another, they're identical as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. I can't differentiate.
I didn't care for the last page reveal of MYX. I don't care for those characters.
I agree.
And then over in, I think it was X-Men.
Oh, X-Men was the one that bored you.
Yeah, it bored me. They brought one character back from the dead, two from the dead, inexplicably.
Yep.
I didn't care for the art style. I didn't care for how one or two of the characters were drawn. Then I realized, it's just the art. And it undercut some moments from recent comics. And it's like, you're making that out to have been a big deal, and then it's as if nothing happened here. That undercuts this story as much as the other one.
Yeah, I understand what you mean by that. I liked the team in X-Men a little bit. I didn't love it, but I liked it. And I thought it was kind of cool that they were at that abandoned building, although it felt so cold.
Yeah.
Based on what had come before. I was just like, man, out in the middle of nowhere. And then they have like that giant sentinel kind of over the town, which was weird. They just left it.
Well, it made Cyclops and the X-Men seem a little ruthless.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, that doesn't make it made sense, but at the same time, I was like, it was off-putting.
That's a Magneto move, not an X-Men move.
Exactly. Yes, yes. And, of course, Magneto's on the team, so there you go. Now, they did take the Scott Summers thing and the love triangle, and they kind of did away with that, it felt like.
Yeah, I almost think instead of putting Cyclops here, I would have put him over in Phoenix, obviously renamed the title accordingly.
Yeah.
And have them just take some time away from Earth as a couple.
Wouldn't have that been better? Because they set that up and then boom, she's off, you know?
Well, and she's got so much damn power, Jean Grey, in the Phoenix title that it's like, how are you going to tell stories with that?
That's the thing. She has complete control. There's no breaking up of her psyche or losing. And so it's almost weird because she's, I would say, even more powerful than an Omega Level 8 X character.
Oh, yeah. What I would do is I would have her encounter the Silver Surfer, who's usually at that godlike level out in space.
Yeah.
And she just toys with him, and it's like, you're nothing to me, kind of a thing.
Tell Galactus not to come around here.
Exactly, exactly. Push him around a little.
Yeah. So it's weird. That's what she's doing. And I guess it's like, oh, I'm so powerful. Oh, I'm causing harm because I'm so powerful, which is weird.
Yeah, Phoenix wasn't what I was expecting.
Nope.
And it wasn't bad, but I don't know that I'll continue with it. NYX, I'm going to give a little bit more leeway just to see where they go.
Yeah.
But I'm not guaranteeing I'll stick with that. X-Men already doesn't feel like essential reading, but I've got another issue or two on pre-order, so I'll give it a little bit.
How about X-Force?
X-Force is also in that do I keep it or not category.
Yeah, that's one I feel like I'm not going to keep. I didn't enjoy it.
It had the benefit of assembling the team, having an adventure, prepping to move on to the next mission, so it's like a done-in-one kind of thing. It's moving at a quicker pace, which I like.
Yeah.
It's fine, but doesn't feel like essential reading.
Yeah. One thing I'm noticing with all these X books is they're trying to capture that magic from the 1990s. The books even have a 90s feel, the layouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You got that.
Well, I hadn't realized that until you said it, and I'm like, you know, a lot of people left Marvel and comics in the 90s, so is that really the aesthetic to go for?
I don't think so. I was like, oh my God, this has a 90s vibe, just like the pages in between and stuff. I was like, oh my God. And then, okay, I was kind of at a point getting a little bit tired of Krakoa era, but I would say this is not a step up from that. I feel like at best sideways is the way I feel.
Step down. Clear step down.
Step down. Yeah, step down. Yeah, at best sideways. And I feel like two of the books I want to drop already, so I would say definitely a step down.
And I think part of it was House of X, Powers of X. While I don't think they were perfect reads or anything, they were game changers and served as a breathing space from what had gone before to what would come after.
Yeah, exciting.
We didn't really have that here at all. Because some of the stuff from the Krakoa era still dribbled out this month. The Invincible Iron Man, which ties in with the Emma Frost stuff.
Yeah.
X-Men Heir to Apocalypse. So they've got things that they're still kind of dealing with while attempting to relaunch. So not having a mini X-Men retrenchment event thing, I think, was a mistake.
Yeah.
And everything has its own separate thing, which is good. I don't want them all to be tied at the hip or whatever, but none of this is making me feel it's a brand new beginning and that I really have to stay with it.
That's exactly how I feel. I'm going to pick and choose a few creative teams and a few books that I'm enjoying, and the others, I don't feel compelled to feel like I'm engaged in this world in any. They're so disjointed that it feels like I don't need to read anything other than what is working for me.
Normally, when I go through and put my order together, I mark things as, yeah, I'll probably get it, and no, but I'll consider it. And this is going to go, all four of these are going to go in that, no, I'll consider it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can understand exactly what you're saying there. Yeah.
Because, you know, when I put together the Excel order form, I'll put a one in those things, yeah, I'm probably going to get it. And sometimes those will go away because I'll reassess. But if it starts with a zero, now it's got to earn its way on the list.
Yeah, exactly.
And out of the four of these, NYX is the most likely one to stay. But I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah. And more on the horizon. More new number ones coming next month.
Exceptional X-Men I'm curious about because I like Kitty Pryde.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What else we got we want to talk about?
There's some other things I could talk about. I mean, Get Fury, I think, is still fantastic, but I've droned on about that book the last two issues. The third issue, still good. Still fantastic. So if you're a fan of Garth Ennis war books and a fan of Frank Castle, this is the crossover for you. You need to read this. This is Frank Castle in Vietnam. Read it. And Nick Fury. So what more could you ask for? And then other than that, Incredible Hulk was pretty bad. It's been horrible, but it's getting slightly better now at issue 14. I'll just leave that there.
You gave up on Captain America, right?
Yeah, Captain America, this is literally the last issue.
So you did get this one?
I did get this one. And this had that backup story, I think.
Yeah, it did. It had the backup, which I didn't care for.
Me neither.
the main story, though, I mean, this is not a Captain America story, which I said before. It's just, do we have any idea how long Straczynski's on the book?
Too long. I don't know, but he has not written a good issue the entire run, in my opinion.
If he's only going to be on for another few issues, I may write it out, but if it doesn't look like that's the case, and let's be honest, it doesn't look like that's the case, it's on the list to drop.
Yeah, it's that bad. I'm not enjoying any issue I got. I was like, why am I? I get it, and I'm like, why did I get this? Why did I get this? All right, I've said this like four or five times. Maybe that's a sign. Listen to yourself.
Oh, well, and the me of 5-6 years ago would just keep getting this stuff.
Yeah, muscle through, and maybe they have a creative change or something happens.
Go through the valleys to enjoy the peaks and stuff like that. And there's a lot to be said for that, but I'm not at that point right now. And for them to have gotten me off Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, and now maybe Captain America, and those Fantastic Four and Captain America are ones that I have huge collections on and been getting off the rack forever and a day. They'd already gotten me off the Hulk, which was one of the other early ones I'd gotten on in Marvel.
Yeah.
So this is how you lose readers.
Oh, yeah. It really is. And by the way, just a spoiler, a look ahead. You already got my clip, my preview spotlight clip. But finally, Amazing Spider-Man 61, we have a new writer, Joe Kelly.
I don't know that that's enough to get me on the book.
Exactly. It's not a big upgrade, but it's got to be better than Zeb Wells. It has to be.
Whether it clicks with me or not, I don't know that I'm going to bother to find out.
Yeah. So I figure I'd just throw that out there since we were mentioning Spider-Man.
I hadn't noticed that on the clip. I hadn't listened to it yet. So
surprise.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I'm curious to listen to it now. I mean, I was curious before, but now I it may influence a purchase decision. It may not. But never mind. I also want to give a quick shout out to the Ultimate line.
Oh, yeah. Ultimates.
Ultimates. A ton of fun. I loved how Cap got a crash course of the history he skipped over.
Yeah, that was fun.
They may have recruited a new member this issue. I'm not sure. Things are moving along, and it looks like they're trying to move a month by month towards that 18-month countdown. So this seems to be the book of the Ultimate line if you're getting one to get.
Yeah.
Ultimate Spider-Man, I liked, but they were just resetting things for the start of a new trade. Not a whole lot happened.
Exactly. It's very slow-paced. Not much happened, even though it's written well. Not much happens.
Yeah.
I would say this whole 18-month countdown thing is working perfectly for me. Not that you want to get rid of a book or get rid of a title, but you know the referendum and the ultimate fight is coming in a year and a half. It's set up. We know it's coming. Something to look forward to. And you know you're not a little long in the tooth. And actually, I think it'll keep readers around to read the title because they know there's an end point.
Well, it doesn't have to be an end point, though.
It doesn't. It could be a rejiggering.
There's a turning point in 18 months or 16 months now.
Correct. And it could continue.
Very well could, but now with a new mandate.
Exactly. Yeah.
We've met this point of no return. We've gotten past it. Now what?
Exactly. And it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. But it gives it a ticking clock, and they can't just be playing for time. And based on the solicits and stuff, it doesn't look like they will be. So that's the book right now out of the Ultimate line. I'm sticking with both, but Ultimate Spider-Man, if it doesn't move a little faster, as fun as it is, not going to say I'm going to stay on it long term.
Yeah, I would pick both of them up, but yeah, I'm enjoying both of them. But I know what you mean. The Ultimates is the key one.
I'm getting both, but if I had to cut one, it'd be Spider-Man and keep Ultimates.
That makes sense.
That's all I'm saying. Anything else with Marvel?
Now let's go over to the Indies.
All right.
That's the bulk of our books right there, the Indies.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened either, you know what I mean?
But it happened. Here we are.
I think part of it for me is the Star Trek books. are a couple of them. The Power Ranger stuff, although that's hitting the point where I had two issues this month, and I really don't know what the future is going to be on that. And then between things like Gatchaman, Space Ghost, Thundercats, and stuff like that, that's building up my reading in this area.
Yeah. I mean, heck, we got a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one this month, if you got it.
I didn't get that, but I have been picking up the TMNT source book they're doing.
Okay.
And that's pretty well put together. It's a different kind of an approach than a typical Marvel or DC handbook, but it's giving me a definite kind of overview on some of the things that have happened. And I'm more skimming that. I'm not reading it cover to cover. But there have been a couple of entries. It's like, okay, I'm curious about this, and it's enlightening. So it's well done.
Yeah, there is some good stuff in the indie world that I have been reading. And I'm looking through my list, and I'm just like, there's so many good books. I'm like, which one do I talk about? I don't even know where to start.
Okay, there's a new one that came out I want your opinion on.
Okay, which one?
Free Agents.
Oh, that was not one of the highlights. I felt like that book was uninspired, bland, formulaic, no characterization at all. It felt like a 90s comic in all the wrong ways.
That's funny because I put that in my notes exactly. I said 90s image comic in all the wrong ways, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, this felt like something that was just so 90s, and yet at the same time, not good 90s, bad 90s. Oh,
it's
wow.
Kurt Busiek and Fabian Nicieza, and they did some of the early Thunderbolt stuff in the 90s. They are a solid writing team, not that you could tell from this issue.
Yeah, this is the Astro City guy. Like, what happened?
Well, and again, Fabian's done a lot of stuff that's been solid.
And it's just not good.
And I could not get into this. I didn't care about the characters. It was more shock and awe than interesting. And a lot happened in this issue, so it's not like they were just playing for time or anything. I didn't care about any of it.
No, it was all like action sequences with a bunch of people that you had no clue who any of them were, because they didn't tell us who they were.
Well, that's the thing, is at the start, they did.
Yeah, they kind of did.
We get the captions, we get the name, we get a line or two on them or something like that. It just wasn't very useful.
Yeah, exactly. You just didn't care. It's like, okay, here's the name, here's this person, okay, but I don't know who the hell they are. And then, boom, we're off to the races and with a bunch of people who I don't care about them. I didn't care one iota about anything they did or said or what took place. It was weird. I just felt so disconnected from it. And why am I doing this? Why are they selling this to me?
So not just me then. All right. I feel better.
No. I felt so disappointed because I know they're both better than this, the artist and the writer, and I hope for something more. I even called it out in a previous clip, and man, I missed on that one.
Well, next issue, they've got a guest star. Issue after that, they've got a guest star, and I've got issue 4 also pre-ordered. I don't know if this is an ongoing or not, but as far as I'm concerned, it's a 4-issue limited series.
Yeah. It's a 2-issue limited series for me. I caught it in time to not issue before I sent in my order for issue 3. I took it off. It was like the day before the order form was due. So I only have two. 2-issue limited series for me.
Yeah, well, I'm behind on my reading. I just read it the other night, so.
Yeah, that's the only upside to not letting your comics stack up and reading them on time.
Yeah, cut the losses.
Really quick.
Boom. Yeah, you did better than I did on that. That's a shame. I was hoping for better.
Me too. By the way, still great creators, just not this book.
Yeah, everybody swing and a miss sometimes. It happens.
Exactly. So, okay, what's a good one? I'll let you go first. You pick.
I'm going to go with the pair of Public Domain and Domain.
Okay. I read Domain. I did not read Public Domain.
Oh.
You guys like Public Domain so much that I ordered Domain when it came out and never read Public Domain. So.
Okay, let's start with Domain because it's basically three characters find... They essentially have like a Green Lantern origin. They're just going to split the power ring, essentially, kind of, sort of. Not exactly, but you get the idea.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun read.
It was fun. It was self-contained. It's a 5-issue miniseries. I'm curious where it's going. But I read that after I read Public Domain number 6.
And that's better, I'm assuming?
Well, Public Domain number 6 is about the creative team for the Domain.
Oh, okay.
And it's basically... Old school creator has the character, got the rights back. They're doing it. His sons are helping him out. They've got a couple other people in the new team. And the old guy's like, I just want to tell the story of whatever the one guy's name was, the guy versus the two girls in Domain. he's the lead, and that's how it's got to be. And the other people, it's like, no, we got to modernize it. We got to have something else. So it shouldn't be that guy. It should be a girl or something. And then one of the sons is like, it's not an either or. It could be both. It could be all three. Let's have three leads. Boom. We get a domain, three leads. So we're seeing some of the behind the scenes stuff in public domain. That we're then seeing the issue in domain.
Okay. And see, I would never been reading public domain, so I jumped on this one, the new number one domain. And I enjoyed it for what it is, but I didn't get any of that backstory and context. That makes it more impactful.
Yeah, because it's like watching... It's funny because they're not breaking the fourth wall. They're not getting metatextual about it. But one narrative is both narratives are informing the other to a degree.
Yeah, directly impacting. That's amazing. I like that. That's clever.
But if you look at the cover of Domain, you've got those credits there at the top that are crossed out.
Yeah.
Miles Dallas, Tanya Coe, Sid Dallas, Dave Dallas. Those are the characters in public domain.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. I like that.
So I wasn't sure if Zdarsky could pull this off or not. I felt Domain was surprisingly good. I'm really enjoying public domain. And I think public domain was really putting an interesting spin on kind of revamping characters, the how, the whys, should you not, and I had some interesting things to say on that, or at least start the discussion on that.
Very cool. All right. Nice. Well, I'm enjoying Domain outside of all that. It was still a good read all on its own for me.
I recommend if you can pick up like the trade for public domain.
Do it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they'll collect this together and kind of interlace the issues one day. I don't know.
I doubt it. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it would be kind of cool if they did, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It would be interesting.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
Very cool. Okay. Over to me. And I have so many. You know, I was like, maybe I could do Flash Gordon because of the book club, but I'm not going to do that. Okay, I'm going to go with a brand new number one called Big Burn, and it is from Distillery. So it's one of those big magazine comics. And with Distillery, kind of their MO is they come out and they give you three issues, and then they collect those three issues in like this big hardcover. But okay, number one, I think this is a book you would like except for the form factor, John. Basically, the creative team behind it is Joe Henderson and Lee Garbett. And that's the team behind Skyward and Shadecraft, which we really enjoy those. So I was like, oh, this creative team, I got to read this. So it starts as a love story between two bank robbers, each with their own skill set, but yet they're complementary to each other. And they literally meet robbing a bank, which is kind of funny. And the bank robber story ends, as you might expect, with an apprehension. And so the whole twist, the whole story with the Big Burn takes place is this couple make a deal with the devil to escape captivity. And the woman focuses, I can't remember their names right now, on how to get her soul back, and slowly she's losing her mind over this. The gentleman, you know, gets a unique and interesting view of life in hell, and he sees how hell is kind of run and set up and how it functions. And that sets up a whole flip of the script for an almost Ocean's 11 ultimate heist type thing that is going to take place in hell.
Could be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is a fun book. And this creative team, they've done good things every time I've read them. And so that's the setup for it. And so when it's collected one day, or if you want to, you know, reach out to Eric, he might be able to get it for you. It's fantastic. And it's that creative team we really like.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, and it is a magazine, though. Magazine size. Yeah. So big. That's the only bad thing. You got to get a magazine box.
So one of the things I got in, not this shipment, but I guess the one after this, was the Superman versus Ali tabloid size.
Oh my God, I got that too. It was so big.
Do they make the equivalent of comic book boxes, bags, and boards for tabloid size?
They don't. If they do, I don't have them. I got it, and I'm like, maybe I'll use these folder boxes that my wife uses for tax returns. I'm like, because they don't fit in a magazine box. They're just laying there.
I've got enough things of that general form factor, some a little smaller and stuff like that. It's just, I've got to, you know, I'll go slide them on top of some books in a bookcase or something like that, never to be seen again sort of a deal.
Yeah. There's another one being solicited in this DC Connect where it's the Batman, like, Rogues Gallery or something that came out in this big format. So you might be getting another one in the future.
I might not.
Or you might not.
Actually, I am getting another one because they did, or got it recently, the Legion of Superheroes edition.
Of there the, you go. The
all new collector, whatever it was, special, yeah.
Yeah, honestly, they are a little bit annoying when there's no box for them.
Yeah, yeah, there's nowhere to put them.
Yeah. All right, back to you, John.
All right, I'm going to go through the Star Trek titles I got in rapid succession.
Okay, cool.
Sons of Star Trek, I think, pretty much landed the ending, not entirely. There were a couple of characters that wound up just to be there to show it's an alternate timeline and stuff like that, but it was a worthwhile read overall. Star Trek number 22 got to see a character from Next Gen that we haven't seen much of for a bit, and that was kind of fun, but it was a little bit more of a cryptic scene than I would have liked, so I hope they're setting up for like a one-shot down the line or something like that with that character.
Okay.
But then we got the Star Trek Annual and Star Trek Defiant number 17.
Oh, okay.
And in both of them, we get to see Professor Miles O'Brien. He's teaching at Starfleet Academy. And it seems clear that that was what was told to both artists. And both artists said, well, he's going to be in a room. He's going to be teaching up in the front of the classroom. That makes sense. One of them had him in uniform. One of them in more professorial sort of clothing. And he was well used in both. But it's like, I'm getting these, and they came out like one the week after the other or something. And I'm like, how does this line up? You know, he's having one adventure here. He's having another adventure over there. Again, I love the character. Colmini did a great job in the shows as him. And I think this did a great job with the character here. But it's one of those things where editorially, they could have coordinated a little better and made that jive a little better versus the cognitive dissonance I had kind of reading the two. And I did think the Star Trek Defiant one, while it was a good issue, was a bit of a shift in tone and style for the issue, because it was almost more O'Brien than the Defiant crew.
Very cool.
So they're telling some very interesting stuff with Trek over there at IDW and have been for a couple hundred issues now. If you're into Trek and need something to tide you over between seasons of the shows, it's worth checking out.
Very cool. My wife and I have been watching Wesley Crusher a lot because we are rewatching the whole Big Bang.
Ah.
I don't know if you watched that, did you?
Didn't watch it. He also does a behind-the-scenes show on Trek where he interviews various people and whatnot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they have a lot of Star Wars, Star Trek references.
Oh, yeah,
All kinds of nerdy stuff. I love it.
If you like the actor, he also was in a couple episodes of Leverage.
Oh, okay. Cool.
As a computer hacker, Chaos, who was just a complete piece of work.
Very cool. All right.
And he did a great job with the role.
Nice.
One that I'd like to see in Leverage Redemption, if they ever get around to bringing him back. Anyways.
All right. Over to me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give you a weird new number one. And this is from Dark Horse. And this one, I was talking, and I did a preview spotlight clip on it. And I was wondering where my guy, Zach Kaplan, had gone. Because, like, every time I read what he writes, I enjoy myself. But at the same time, he goes around from time to time, and he kind of disappears for me. And so he wrote Kill All Our Mortals number one with Dark Horse. And it was a pretty awesome debut issue. I mean, it was pretty solid. So I picked it up. Oh, by the way, I just picked up his Port of the Earth hardcover, by the way, that came out. And that I love that story.
Yeah.
But we see a couple being stopped and they're almost killed in Africa. So you're seeing this girl. She's kind of like tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. The guy's just, you know, a normal guy. And anyways, these people are coming. They're going to take him out. The guy's jumping out of his car, you know, trying to protect her. And they're not there necessarily for him. They're there for her. And so the whole spin on it, her name's Freya Asvald, and she brings home her reporter, who is her boyfriend, who's a reporter for the BBC, home to basically to meet her family. And they're having dinner with them. And it turns out the whole hook and the flip to it is her father is Eric the Red, an Icelandic Viking, and they are ultra wealthy. They become immortal. And they're almost like a mafia group in the sense that they're very wealthy and powerful, and you don't talk about what goes on in the family. We keep things hush-hush. We don't bring people into this world. And her showing up with them is almost like you forfeited his life. You know this. And that's the setup for the end of the first issue. And I was like, this is cool. I loved it. So it was a nice setup, ton of fun. And so if you are not a Zach Kaplan fan, you should be. And if you are, this is what he's writing over at Dark Horse, and it's a ton of fun.
He does do good stuff, and you're right. He'll do something and then kind of vanish for a little bit and then come back and do some stuff, which if that's what it takes for him to get solid material out, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And it was so funny because Zach Kaplan is almost like Joe Henderson and Lee Garbett. They disappear and then they come back years later and boom, they come out with something just really fantastic that you're just not expecting. You're like, wow, this is good. So whenever you see his name or you see Joe Henderson, jump on it. It's going to be good. It's just a given.
Good advice. Yeah, yeah.
Back to you or?
Yeah.
All right.
I think the last stuff I have to really talk about is the Power Rangers stuff. We got Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 122 and then Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Darkest Hour. And that concludes the Power Rangers stuff. I mean, they've got a Power Ranger Prime that they're just announcing, I think, in the latest solicits. But this was kind of wrapping up everything they'd been doing for the last, you know, however many issues. And by which I mean, it's obviously 122, but I don't remember if they reused the numbering from Go-Go Power Rangers, the Saban. They've had enough different titles, I've lost count of how many issues they've had.
Ah.
122 was a good read for a penultimate issue. But remember how you were saying when you read Shattered Grid, you're like, there are all these Rangers, I don't know who they are?
Yes.
I was kind of feeling that with this issue.
Oh my gosh.
Because they've got a plethora of Rangers in play from different teams and stuff, including some comic-only Rangers like the Omega Rangers, the Solaris Rangers. They've got the lesser-known Hyperforce Rangers, which is from when they did a, I don't know if it was a Twitch stream or what, but a role-playing game version of the Power Rangers. So we never really saw those characters as such, but we saw the people who were role-playing the characters as like a tabletop role-playing game. So
okay.
I never watched that. So it's like, wait, which characters are these? And then to top it off, they altered the costumes on various Rangers because of grid shenanigans and stuff like that. So
to make it even more confusing.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a bit much. And none of that really impacted the story, because often it just mattered that they were Rangers, not which Rangers they were. But it definitely gave me an appreciation for how you were feeling during Shattered Grid.
Ah.
And then with Darkest Hour, I'm not going to say it was a perfect conclusion to the series, but it was solid. It landed the ending, but I still was left a little wanting. And I think that wasn't through any shortcoming of the story, but just a lack of certainty I have for where the franchise is even going, or if it's going. And I don't think Darkest Hour was as good as Shattered Grid, but I think it was a pretty high bar to reach. But I think they did a solid job of trying to reach for that and paying off of some of what they did there in some ways and acting as a kind of a decent sequel or bookend to that.
Oh, very cool.
So I think they did themselves well here, and I'm really curious where the franchise goes moving forward, both in comics and out.
All right. Very, very cool. Well, over to me, where I'm going to tell you, Dark Horse has had some good stuff coming out from it, the Zach Kaplan book, but they've also had Mark Millar come on board.
Mm.
And we got Nemesis Rogues Gallery number. And Mark Miller. I keep wanting to say, well, Millar.
I say Millar too, because that's what I had been told at one point it was. But he's clearly going with the Miller World stuff in his podcast, and I figure he knows how to say his name, so we'll go with that.
Yeah, Mark Miller, but I'm going to keep calling him Millar from time to time. He's excellent as usual. You know, we've all read this type of story, but his execution's unrivaled with everything that he writes. And so I am just so happy that he's brought his whole indie works over. And he's written a lot at Marvel and DC. I haven't read all of it, but I intend to read all of the stuff. I want to go back and read his stuff. Nemesis, it did not end well for him after the events of Big Game, the big mega event over in Miller World. And we see the character Nemesis. Now he's in a full body cast, and he still has a following. And what is set up, it's almost like a Ra's al Ghul. There's a group. They're almost like the Hand, or they have like a Ra's al Ghul Lazarus Pit type thing. And they're like, we can make you whole, but it'll cost you. So literally, he's having to give up almost all of his wealth, everything that he's built up, Nemesis, to pay to become whole. And now it's going to be a starting from the ground up, The Empire Strikes Back.
Could be interesting, yeah.
And I'm just like, yes, let's do this. Yeah, I'm on board for it. And it's a ton of fun. So if you are not enjoying your Marvel and DC heroic books, he's going to be writing the second volume of The Midnight Club. He has the Magic Order. He has Nemesis. So he's doing all the heroics over at Dark Horse.
Well, he's doing supernatural and superpowered-ish stuff. I wouldn't say he's doing the heroics.
That's true. Nemesis is not very heroic.
I would be hard-pressed to name any of his characters that would go stop a bank like, you know, superheroes that Marvel and DC used to do.
Yeah.
Of course, when was the last time we really saw that in Marvel and DC either?
That's true. They don't do that anymore. It's very rare.
And that used to be a go-to way to start an issue.
And now it's just gone. It's everything's got to be epic. The world's going to be destroyed, or you know, the Shi'ar in space or whatever. It's just like
it boils down to gang warfare. You're fighting somebody because you fought them before.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, silly.
By the way, I just wanted to mention this. I'm not a Teenage Mutant Ninja fan, but I am a Jason Aaron fan, so I did pick it up. The issue worked for me. For me, it felt like a little bit of a jumping on point, but other people I heard, they complained because they said, oh, it's not really a jumping on point because it's picking up where issue 150 left off. But I didn't know that, and I kind of saw some of the cartoons that my brothers would watch them, and we got to focus on Raphael the Turtle.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the next issue is like Donatello.
Yeah, they're doing the first four, one per turtle.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, they're almost doing like that Fantastic Four, but it's not the Fantastic Four. So if you don't like that, that's not going to be there. But I thought it was a fun issue. I enjoyed it.
And it sounds like it was accessible. That's a good way to do it. If you get new people on board and people can still follow in from the old continuity, that's what they should be doing at Marvel and DC.
Yeah, I literally never read it, and I picked it up, and I had fun, and I'm going to keep reading it until I'm not having fun.
Yeah. Because, again, one of my beefs with some of the X-books was, aren't those people dead?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're just going to ignore all that.
Well, and if they're going to ignore it, then I'm going to ignore it and not get the book.
Pretty much. It feels like, why am I wasting my time? Nothing that happened in the last 5 or 6 years mattered, so it doesn't matter to me either.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where they're training us to be here today, gone tomorrow readers.
Yep, unfortunately.
Yeah. Anything else to talk about? Are we done?
Ah, we're done.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.